Hi, I'm Linda from Little Farmhouse Flowers.
And I'm Emily from Bonshop Flowers.
And this is the Frost on Flowers podcast, where we dig into the hustle of cool climate cultivation.
Thanks for joining us. We hope you enjoy today's episode.
Welcome to the first episode of the Frost on Flowers podcast. Thanks for joining us. We're so excited to be starting this. And from what we can tell, many of you are excited too. So thank you for all the great response to our promotion and to letting you know that this is going out into the world. And Emily is here with me tonight and we're going to get things kicked off.
Hi, we thought maybe we'd get started by giving you guys a little background about our friendship and how we got to know each other and everything that's led up to us deciding to do this podcast. Linda and I first met back in October of 2018 when she took my tulip forcing workshop on my farm here in Vermont. And we really quickly found out that we had an uncanny number of things in common.
It was so bizarre. We were like walking around figuring out these weird things about each other. I think the other folks there must have been wondering what in the world was going on.
I think the first connection we made was that we have the same birthday. Mm-hmm. We're born on the same day. And then from there, it was like this domino of bizarre things in common, like our dogs having the same name, and we both had worked in education, and we both had some art background, and the list just kind of went on, and the more we've gotten to know each other, the more things we realize we have in common.
Yeah, like we end up getting our haircut on the same day and all these like strange coincidences.
there's definitely some like cosmic mm-hmm. work at play.
So since then we've, you know, stayed in touch since the workshop, and we consult each other and we share advice and different ideas and vent sometimes when we need to, but we also try to get together and we have some great adventures together. So last year, Emily especially really planned this amazing trip for us to the Netherlands, where we went behind the scenes and we got to learn all about tulip production there, which was so incredible. And we were really going to dig into tulips for at least one episode, I'm sure several, because they're really important crops for both of us.
Right.
But that's going to be, you know, coming up next. We know many of you are interested in this cool climate growing podcast because of the flowers we've been growing now in the winters on our farms. And those have been mainly tulips. So that's coming. Don't worry. We're going to definitely get to that. Before we go too far down the road with this episode, we want to make sure that we thank our sponsor, the Netherland Bulb Company. Family owned and operated on both sides of the Atlantic for more than 35 years, the Netherland Bulb Company is a wholesale supplier of premium Dutch bulbs and bare root perennials. All of the Netherland Bulb Company's products are grown and shipped directly from their farms and packing facilities in Holland. We got to see some of those when we were there. It was so cool. To their customer service and distribution centers in Pennsylvania to ensure that their customers always receive superior service and quality.
And like Linda mentioned, we got to visit and tour around Holland with Ted, the owner of Netherland Bulb Company, and visit a bunch of different bulb farms. I've been working with Netherland Bulb Company for over 25 years, sourcing lily bulbs and my tulip bulbs and lots of other spring bulbs from them, as well as bare root perennial stock and perennial plugs. And I can't say enough good things about them and the quality of their product and their customer service. And I've really developed a longstanding friendship with my bulb rep, and I'm so grateful for him and this company and everything they've done to help me grow my business to the point where I'm at.
And me too now, since you shared, you know, their information with me, Emily. They've been become an important part of my business also. So thank you.
Awesome.
And if you're interested in learning more about the Netherland Bulb Company, please check out their website, netherlandbulb.com. You can also find them on Instagram and Twitter and on Facebook. And now let's get back to the podcast. Great. And now we're going to hear a little bit from Emily about her growing situation and how she got to where she is today.
Yeah. So I actually grew up surrounded by flowers and gardens at my parents' business, the Von Trapp Greenhouse in Waitsfield, Vermont. And my mom has a background in horticulture, and my dad is a self-taught master gardener. So from a very young age, I really was given all these really rich opportunities to engage in growing and cultivation, and immediately was drawn to the wonder and the beauty and the magic of growing things. And on top of that, then the aspect of harvesting flowers, and as a small child, I really was drawn to the act of being creative and creating bouquets and making arrangements. When I was 7 years old, my mom actually took a flower arrangement that I had made and brought it down to the local fair that was happening in town. And I can remember I won a huge jar of jelly beans, which I'm not a jelly bean fan, but it was just like so rewarding to feel like, oh, they appreciate my flowers so much that I have this prize. So it sat in my closet and I never ate the jelly beans, but it meant a lot to me. So my interest in flowers continued to grow, and I ultimately started to harvest bouquets and put them together and sell them at a local farmers market here in town. And from there, I started selling to our local grocery store, the Heron's Market in Waitsfield. And I've now been selling there since I was 12. So I feel really old saying this, but that's 30 years that I've been selling to that store. And I continued to do my cut flower bouquets at that market. I also started selling to a market in Montpelier, and did that all throughout high school and into college. And then my daughter was born in 2006, and I was trying to figure out, what is the best way for me to make a living, and really wanting to continue on with my flower business, but feeling like I needed something that felt more secure. So I have a degree in education, and I took a job as the director of an early childhood center so that I could be with my daughter, and have some consistent income. But all the while, I continued to grow my flower business and kind of juggled everything. And I think one of the things for me was it was a lot. It was like at least three hats. And I got to a point where it felt like it was too much. And I eventually switched jobs and was a preschool teacher at the local elementary school, and then also continuing with my flower business, raising my daughter. And it was just a lot. Like I would be at school all morning, come home with my kiddo, do dinner, bath, bedtime, and then I'd go back to the greenhouse and be harvesting under lights until I would get the phone call from my mom saying, "We're trying to go to sleep. You need to turn the light off in the greenhouse. It's too bright. Go home." To which I'd be like, "I just have to harvest like 10 more tulip bouquets," or whatever point I was at. So it was a lot of like what I refer to as like struggling and juggling to try to keep this dream alive of being able to be a flower farmer, but feeling like I needed that security of a more conventional job. And it really wasn't until I started to move into season extension and really go into tulip growing, cool climate tulip growing in the winters, that I got to a point where I could finally give up my teaching job and put all of my energy into my flower business. And my tulip crop has really just been a total game changer for me. So that's a little bit about how I got started and my roots in flower farming. Linda, you want to share
Yeah,
your
sure.
backstory?
So I would say that I came to flower farming a lot later in life, but I was always really interested in art and design and visual things since childhood. My parents didn't have much more than, kind of like landscaping gardens that they kept at our house, but I always, really loved them and loved being around flowers. And like we said before, we were both teachers. I after college, got into teaching mostly high school age students, and I was teaching all different kinds of art and design. But my teaching schedule, with these long summer breaks really allowed for me to have this dedicated time to kind of dabble in hobbies. And after a few years, I started to really get interested in flowers and growing things, and that part of my hobby, it just started to grow and grow and grow and grow. And I think this happens for a lot of people who are just coming into flower farming right now or getting interested in growing. It's, like you said, Emily, you were balancing all these different things, wearing all these different hats. I was doing seed starting at night in the school's greenhouse where I worked. I was running to the greenhouse between classes to vent it because it didn't have, automatic vents or windows to open. It was like this crazy juggling act. And after the school day, after dinner at home with my family, I'd go back to school, and I'd be there late at night sowing seeds and taking care of things and kind of feeding this dream along, until it got to that point, that tipping point, like you were talking about too, where it's just like, oh, right now I'm managing two different jobs. It would be really nice to focus on one of them. And that's about the time that I made the change, and the same time that we started looking for our farm. We didn't have a place to grow yet when I was starting all of these seedlings, when I was starting my dream. And I gave notice at our school in the winter time that I wouldn't be returning the following year, and then we really had to make it happen. We had to find land, and we had to break ground and get things moving right along. I knew from our area that the possibilities for flower sales probably laid mostly in event work. We're in sort of a destination wedding area, so I decided to start out with a focus, especially on summer event work. So that's kind of how I got started here. And I'm in Jay, New York, near Lake Placid, in the northern Adirondacks. Emily and I are kind of situated across Lake Champlain from each other, with her being, right across the lake in Vermont. We're just a short ferry ride from each other. So that's kind of where we are located here in northern, in the Northeast US. And more recently, I've moved into growing year round, kind of like Emily. That started out with experiments in our basement, trying to figure out how to force bulbs, and then eventually learning from Emily how to do that really well. That part of my business has grown now quite substantially. Now we have a heated greenhouse, and we do some winter wholesale work, and we sell flowers also, to our local retail and wholesale customers in the wintertime also. So that's kind of how we are starting to, extend our season. We haven't quite reached the full circle of the entire year. I think there were a couple of weeks this past year when we didn't have fresh flowers for sale, but we're getting there, and making our business more sustainable as a family farm year round has been really important, especially during the pandemic and everything that's going on right now. Okay, so now I'm going to toss it back to Emily. We're going to get into the good stuff, the stuff that everybody wants to know about, like what is your setup like? How does your infrastructure work? Things like that. And really, what is the lay of the land over there in Waitsfield?
So like I said, my parents run the Von Trapp Greenhouse in Waitsfield, and their business is primarily growing annual and perennial plants for gardens and for planters. And then they also do hanging baskets and different ornamentals, herbs, and veggie starts. And I'm really fortunate in that I get to use a fair amount of their facility. I pay them rent to be able to use their greenhouses and other facilities on the property. And what's really worked out well is that our businesses really dovetail. So when they're really busy and needing a lot of the real estate of the greenhouse, that's when I'm at the point where most of my crops have moved outside. And when they're slower in the fall and early winter months, that's when I've got their facility full to the brim with my tulips and other cool crops that I'm growing during the winter months. Just to kind of give you a sense of the property, we have six greenhouses. The first one is a greenhouse that my father built back in 1980, and it's kind of a multi-purpose space in that there's a three-bay garage, a root cellar, a potting room with a bench where we can pot up plants. And then the greenhouse space is attached to that. So the north side of the greenhouse is basically a solid structure, so it helps to retain heat. And then the southerly side and the east and west are covered in polycarbonate, so like rigid, corrugated hard poly. And that greenhouse is a really great setup for growing in the wintertime because of the southern exposure, because of the way the snow sheds off the pitch of the roof. And we kind of have everything we need all in that one space, especially for the tulip forcing that I'm doing and the other bulb forcing, because I've got a bulb cellar there and a cold garage. So all in all, that space has really been incredible for what I'm trying to do in my business. The other greenhouses that we have are freestanding, heated tunnels. And so there are five of those. So I get to use all of that space when it's not being needed for my parents' production. And it works out really well, but there are the times, and Linda knows this well, where it can get really stressful when we like squeak into April and I still have thousands of tulips that I'm trying to finish up with in the heated space, and they're getting all of their cuttings and seedlings going, and it's, stress and tension start running high and I start getting evicted. Which is why in years past I would throw up something that I would refer to as a MacGyvered pallet hoop house, that's placed between two of our other heated greenhouses. And this just gave me like a little overflow space during that time where I'm getting evicted. And it allowed me to finish up my tulips during the time where like there was still threat of frost or say hail. Like I had a little bit of a covered space where I could get that finished. And so basically, is a structure that was comprised of pallets. So I did a run of pallets down the sides and then pallets on the front, and then used 3/4 inch conduit that I drilled holes directly into the pallets and then ran the conduit there, covered it with plastic, and then used a pellet stove if heating was necessary. That was my heat source. And that's worked great for the last couple years. And then this fall, I finally, took the leap and I purchased a tunnel from Farmer's Friend, which I'm really excited about. And I'll be putting to use this coming spring. But in the past, I didn't really feel like I had the money to make the investment. So by reusing and repurposing the materials of the pallets and the conduit, it worked, and all it cost me was like half a day's work to throw it up. So that was a good solution at the
So
time.
awesome.
So a lot of what I'll probably be sharing here is about, cool growing and the stuff that we're doing like in the deep part of winter. But like I said at the beginning, I grow year round. So I am growing out in the field during the spring, summer, and fall months, and I've got about an acre under cultivation. And some of the plants are peony plants that I've had in the field since my parents planted them. So we're talking, those are about 30 years old. And then there's a lot of perennials that I've added, and I do many, many annuals in the spring, summer, and fall. So, in addition to the field growing that I'm doing in the summer, as soon as one of the greenhouses that my parents are growing in empties out, usually like beginning of May, I start filling that house up with my summer and fall grown lilies. And I grow them all in a greenhouse because that works best, and it's something that I've been doing now since I was 17, so it's it works. So growing in the greenhouse during the summer and out in the fields, and just to give you a sense of our property, my father's family purchased the dairy farm that's across the way from us, and which my parents' parcel was all a part of back in the 50s. And the land that we're on was originally pasture, farm field, up until my parents started building on it in the early 80s. And the soil is just really rich and beautiful. I'm so fortunate. I know there's people out there who have really sandy or really clay soils, and when we turn the soil, it literally just looks like black gold, and things grow really, really well. Amazing drainage. And because it's an open pasture, we get lots of light. There's a gorgeous vista. I mean, we're really, truly blessed to be growing in the space that we are. So over the years, as my business has grown, especially really within the last couple years since I left my teaching job, the amount of markets that I'm selling to has really increased. So during peak production, I can be selling to as many as 15 markets throughout central Vermont. And so we're talking like co-ops, small independent grocers. I have collaborations with a really lovely small chocolate shop in Burlington called New Chocolat. And then I'm also in partnership with Home and Garden Vermont, which is a small, really lovely gift shop and florist in Burlington. And so that's primarily where I'm selling. I've also, in the last couple of years, have started doing CSAs, selling direct to the members of my community who are just really eager to get blooms on a weekly basis. And so primarily I'm doing wholesale, but the CSA piece is, there's a little bit of retail. Before the pandemic hit, we would do occasional pop-up shops where we'd invite people to come and, walk through the greenhouse and buy bouquets of tulips or anemone or potted bulbs. But we've kind of put that all on pause for a bit until things kind of shake out. So I'm also just so grateful that I've had the opportunity to be the third generation to cultivate the land here where I grow my flowers, and so grateful to my parents for giving me the opportunity to grow my dream and support me in what I'm doing and give me help and encouragement along the way. I know how lucky I am that I have access to land, and that I have support of my family, and it is something that I do not take for granted. It's really, really special. And big thanks to my mom and dad for everything that they do for me to support this dream that I'm growing.
And I'll hop in and share a little bit about the lay of the land over here in New York. Unfortunately, this part I don't think I have much in common with Emily. I wish I had more in common with her growing setup and her amazing soil and everything like that. But we're sort of in this little valley. Unfortunately, the frost and fog, frost fogs, whatever they are, they settle right, into our farm when it's getting cold. So we have a really late frost season into the spring and a really early frost coming in the fall. But we sort of, work around that. We have a lot of clay in our soil. We're just, it's a young farm. When we moved here 5 years ago, the parcel that we're on is 2.5 acres, and it was part of a larger dairy farm originally, but all of it, had been let go. So we have just our 2.5 acres with our house on it, and that's really where we started with nothing else. When we were looking for land, we toured a bunch of different farms around, and they either had, really rough house situation that would require a lot of, remodeling, renovating to even make it livable. Coupled with that, an amazing farm infrastructure, like everything that I would need to really get going with farming, or the opposite, a great house that was livable for my family, but no farm infrastructure. So we chose the latter. We chose a house that was ready to go because I wanted to make sure that, my family was comfortable. We were uprooting them and moving further away from their schools and my husband's job. So we had a lot of sod and weeds and not much else, and kind of started our first season with the help of another farm who came down and did an initial plow to break ground for us, and I did a lot of shoveling, a lot of wheelbarrowing, just moving piles of things from one place to another, hauling compost around. And then eventually sort of graduated, and I would add a few low tunnels and a few more low tunnels, and got to the point where I had 12 low tunnels, and they became a little too much to manage. And then we started building larger caterpillar tunnels. So we now have five farmer's friend caterpillar tunnels, and one of them I've converted into a heated growing space. So that's where we're doing most of our year-round growing now, especially through the winter. But initially, we were making things work even by, just growing in our fieldstone cellar down there, which was pretty amazing how many flowers we're able to produce from just that small setting. But with Emily's help, we were able to figure out kind of how to make that work and how to use our little cooler. We have a pull behind trailer that was spray foamed and turned into, kind of a mobile walk-in cooler, but that's our cooler right now. And I also have a prefab shed that serves kind of as our studio and also right now as cold storage for bulbs and things like that in the winter time. We have a beautiful concrete slab that is kind of an ugly reminder of the projects we weren't able to accomplish last year during the pandemic, but hopefully, this year it's definitely, something we need to finish. We need to finish this small barn that will go on this slab, and it will include a nice big cooler space where we can really expand our bulb forcing operation with help from that space. So that's kind of where we are now. In terms of markets, when we started initially, to really get started, I joined a couple of farmers markets and, tried to get the word out about what we were doing here 5 years ago. And that led to inquiries for small weddings, and that work led to inquiries for bigger weddings. And eventually the wedding and event work was really, our primary business, making trips up to Lake Placid to serve the wedding industry up there and all those other venues in the Adirondacks. We started to build in some other things, and especially last year when the pandemic hit and we lost pretty much all of that wedding work, we built up our markets in other ways. So primarily, we reached out to all the people that we weren't able to serve with flowers before. So there had been a lot of local interest in retail flowers, in wholesale flowers from, other florists or other people, shops in our area. And when we were doing all that wedding and event work, it was really kind of consuming everything that we were able to produce at the time on our farm. So we had to say no to those folks. But the pandemic kind of forced us to re-examine our model and to make some systems that would help us get flowers into people's hands. So now we sell our flowers at a local independent supermarket. We have a popular flower club, cut flower program, and that's actually a delivery service locally. So every Wednesday, we deliver these 6 week subscriptions to customers all around the area. It's about a 100 mile delivery route. And we've just started shipping subscriptions too. So that's a new thing. I haven't even told you, Emily, about that, but we have shipped flower subscriptions now. So that's kind of cool. Yeah.
Yay.
And we also started wholesaling flowers to florists with an overnight shipping opportunity. So retail customers can find our flowers on our website, and we can ship those out overnight, and wholesale buyers can also. We grow all different kinds of annual crops here. We're starting to build our perennial resources every year. I try to add more peonies, more woody cut flower shrubs, things like that. Tulips have become a big crop here. We are harvesting tulips 6 months of the year, which is really insane. I think most people think about tulips as, a 1 or a 2 week flower that pops up in their garden, and it gets too hot and the petals drop and they're kind of gone. But like Emily, we have made tulips a big part of our process here. We force lily bulbs also, grow dahlias. Recently I've really gotten into growing roses too. After struggling for several years to get to make a go of them, I started to plant them inside one of our caterpillar tunnels. And what I'm finding is that we're a zone, or maybe even more than a full zone, warmer in those unheated tunnels. So now I have a collection of garden roses, and I'm going to triple that collection this year because they're just doing so well. They're really hardly touched by the winter outside, in that space. So that's pretty cool.
That's so amazing. I'm inspired to try roses now.
I love them now more than dahlias. So I'm kind of worried for our dahlia crops. I think we're going to keep whittling them down more. We just don't have the pest problems with the roses, like we do with the dahlias, which may be surprising to some people. I don't know.
No, dahlias are definitely needy girls, that's for sure.
I would say that some of my most significant goals and aspirations when starting this business were to kind of interrupt the flower industry in this area and bring sustainable flowers, especially for the event work that I saw going on. So what I noticed, and when I was talking to people about setting up the business and possibly getting into event flowers, was that there were so many events in this area, and that that meant that all of these flowers were coming in mostly from abroad, and that there was really no local cut flower interest, no understanding of what could be done. And granted, it is very cold here. We're, zone 3B, 4A, kind of around there, up in Lake Placid. They're just, 17 miles away. It's sometimes zone 2 up there. If you go closer to the lake, people right along the lake are zone 6. We're kind of right in the middle. But people, I think before we really started getting things going here, didn't picture this as prime real estate. It certainly isn't prime real estate either. We make it work. We figure out a way to do it, but it's cold. And I would say that now, especially with some of the modifications that we've made to our business model, an important aspect of our work here has become, sharing these sustainably and responsibly grown flowers with our community, with our local customers who come for our flower club, and to enjoy our time with them and to share all these different ideas and help them figure out ways that they can enjoy plants and flowers at their homes in this climate too. And what's going on over there in Vermont? Emily, tell us why you're doing what you do.
So for me, like what really drives me is the goal of being able to offer my community here in central Vermont fresh flowers 365 days a year, and especially during the time when, we all are suffering from the short dark days and needing more beauty. The winter crops are really something that I'm putting as much energy into as possible because I can just see how meaningful it is for people to have access to fresh local flowers. And like you, I really wanted my community and my friends and neighbors to have access to flowers that are local, that are sustainably grown, that are free from chems and pesticides and herbicides. And just having access to something that's fresh and that's going to last. I think so many people, before they buy flowers from, say, you or me or another flower farmer, their relationship with flowers is you buy it at the grocery store, you bring it home, you put it in water, and within like a couple of days it falls apart or falls to pieces. And a huge part of what I'm trying to do is provide my neighbors with the freshest flowers that I possibly can. And so I really try not to hold stuff. I actually don't even have a walk-in cooler. And I take a lot of pride in getting my flowers out to markets within usually less than 24 hours from when they're harvested. Oftentimes it's more like I harvest and within an hour those flowers are headed off to markets. So giving people that experience, showing them what like fresh, healthy, vibrant local flowers are supposed to be like. And I think the other piece for me is making sure that they're accessible for as many people in our community as possible. My markets and I always enjoy, a little bit of tough banter every year. I'm really insistent on keeping my price point at a level where they're available to everybody. I don't want to be selling a product that somebody goes into the store and feels like, oh, that's too much money. I want someone to go in, at this point, if they're paying, say, $15 for one of my bouquets of tulips, they last, at least a week. And if they're away from heat or hot sun, they're lasting 10 days. So for $1.50 a day that they can bring home this fresh local beauty grown, like maybe 20 miles away here in Vermont, and that can brighten their life for, that time period. That's like really what drives me and brings me joy is the idea that I can share that with so many neighbors here.
Awesome.
So I think I explained kind of at the beginning, my business has really taken off and I've reached that like year-round goal in the last couple of years. And I think one of the biggest gifts for me has been connecting with other flower farmers and, in particular, Linda. I mean, we are chatting or sending each other messages and offering each other support for, all of the different components of our businesses, and just having somebody else who gets it and knows it, it's really a gift. And so I'm super grateful for our relationship and the relationships that I've developed with other farmers, because I really think flower farmers are, they're a special breed, and we each all have so much to offer. And I think the community of flower farmers that we're, creating and connecting with, it's really wonderful, and I'm psyched to connect more with everybody.
And I would definitely second what Emily said, knowing that she's right over there on the other side of the lake, it's not really that close of a drive, but it's close enough. And it's a
It's a
ferry ride
ferry right
away,
away.
and we can hop on the phone whenever we want, obviously. And being able to bounce ideas off her. And I feel like so much of what we do, especially in cold climates, is trying to like solve problems sometimes in the moment, like, oh my gosh, Emily, there's gonna be a frost tonight and we weren't expecting it. What are you doing? And it's so nice to have you over there and to be able to get your advice. And I really appreciate that.
Collaboration is so
Very
important.
awesome. All right, so let's see.
Okay.
So should we tie things up?
Do you want to do this little giggle
Maybe.
bit?
Okay, so I had this idea we would tie in this little thing and maybe we get a couple of giggles out of it. I was wondering what would happen if we each kind of took a turn and pointed out the other's biggest strengths or and maybe weaknesses, or maybe this is just going to turn into something really silly, but we'll see what happens. So, Emily, what would you say are my biggest strengths?
Your biggest strengths, I think you're like incredible problem solver, and your ability to like do research and figure out and find the information that you need to solve whatever problem you're solving is like right on point. And you're just so super creative. Like, I'm always blown away. We'll probably talk about this in other episodes, but Linda does these gorgeous drawings for her wedding clients that really, match up to the design that she ends up doing for them in the end. And I'm always blown away by your creativity and your eye and how tastefully and artfully you put things together or photograph your product. Like, it's just always so
You
impressed.
know that I grow weeds really well too, Emily. So let's not forget about that.
I did have the honor of coming over to help Linda before before the farmer's friend's crew came and filmed. I came over and spent what, like a hot 24 hours
It
with
was
you.
hot too. Oh my gosh.
And it was hot. It was hot, but we were also just like, it was hot because we were like busy and just getting it done. And we packed as much as we could into that bit of time, but there was these crops that we had to turn over for Linda. And so we had the weed whacker out and we were cutting everything back and then pulling the landscape fabric. And what remained, you guys are probably familiar with this, is just like all the leftover annual stalks, leaf debris, weeds and stuff,
Gosh.
just in like big piles down the row. And me being my silly self, like instead of picking up little bits, I was like, I'm gonna just like roll this into a huge snowball.
Yeah, I turned around at one point and
And
Emily's rolling a giant, like as big, like bigger than her, giant weed snowman down the row. It was hilarious. It was
snowman.
so big that we couldn't really, at the end of the row, move it other than scoop it up with the bucket of the tractor.
To push it into the bucket. Yeah.
Ridiculous. I'm good at weeds. I appreciate those nice compliments, but I'm also very good at weeds, for sure.
I kind of think we all are. I think that's
That's part
a
of
skill
it.
set that all flower farmers. Yeah. You gotta be really good
It's
at
really
weeds
true.
to
If
grow
you come
flowers.
here and you ask me like how things are going any given season, I'll just tell you that I only see the weeds. Like they stand out. They're there. I know other people don't always see the weeds as much as I do, but they're there.
Right.
And for you, Emily, I would say that you're certainly one of your biggest strengths is how you figure out, and I don't want to say hack things together, but you like tie things together, make things work. You build things out of nothing. I don't know how you do it. It's MacGyvering in its essence.
Yes, we call it a
A
little
little
bit of
bit, it
Lady
is definitely a little
MacGyvering.
bit of Lady MacGyvering, and it is always so fun to see what you're up to over there and to watch you coming up with these different kinds of structures. I don't know. I'm sure we're going to get into a lot of this in this podcast, but the things that Emily builds for her crops, for the love of flower growing, are amazing. They're really so cool. So props to you for all the creativity and the, I don't know. All your skill set with power tools is incredible too. So
I love me some power tools.
so good.
Yeah, and for me that piece is like the problem solving component, like that drives me. Like I give me a problem so I can solve it, you know? Like that's a huge piece of who I am as a person, is trying to figure stuff out and make it the most effective, the most efficient. And so yeah, thank you for that. It's a big piece of, you know, what I love about what I do is finding those
And
solutions.
I would also say that you are very good at diving in headstrong to your projects. Like, I don't know how
Yeah.
many more tulip bulbs you'll order next year. I have no idea, but it's going to be crazy, I'm sure. And I always get sucked into the vortex of the ex of your excitement for ordering things. I'm like, oh yeah, I'll get more of that. I'll figure it out. Yeah,
I'm going
oh
for
my gosh,
125,000 bulbs this year.
it's
No, yeah, no,
incredible. I
next
bet you
year.
will. It'll be more than that, I bet. You figure it out and you
Yeah,
make it
no,
work
it's.
and then you always need more. You'll always need more because you know how to sell them and get them out there. It's incredible.
And it's so funny to hear you say that, because the other people in my life, the terms they use for me, you know, when I usually do. I usually hold my cards pretty close. Like my mom will say to me, "So how many bulbs are you ordering this year?" And I'm usually like, "Well, I'm not totally sure because I'm getting shorted from this company and that company. So I don't know a total yet." And I just avoid and evade. And then when it finally like has to come out because maybe somebody else lets it slip, or you know, she actually sees the packing invoice or whatever, the response in my camp over at Von Trapp Greenhouse is usually to be told, you know, you're crazy. I mean, that's what I get a lot, which I'm kind of a sensitive little Libra. So when I hear that, I always, it kind of makes me want to like cross my arms and stomp my foot, you know, like one of my former preschool students, and be like, I'm not crazy. Why do you always call me crazy? And the reality is, I'm not crazy. What I am is I'm really curious and I'm really creative and I want to do as much as I can and I want to push that envelope and I want to figure out how to do it. And I can always find more space and there's always room for more bulbs. And that's just my personality and my little freight train, but I get called crazy a lot. So I'm sure there's plenty of you out there who get called crazy by family members or friends, and you're not crazy. You're curious, you're creative, and you're determined. And that's kind of what it takes to do this.
Definitely. Awesome. So speaking of tulips, we are definitely going to get a lot more into tulips with our next episode. But Emily, you've got a project you're working on at your farm tomorrow, specifically related to your tulips, right? What's going on over there?
Yeah. So, I mean, we just wrapped up Valentine's Day for
Oh,
one. Ooh,
gosh.
talk about tulips.
Very true. Yeah, there were a lot of tulips being moved here too, all over the place.
Yeah, we did. I achieved 800. We're growing cold up here, so we had a cold snap a while back, and that my philosophy is to work with nature instead of against her. And so when it gets really cold up here, in the name of sustainability, I drop the temperature in my greenhouse, and by doing that, things don't grow when you have to drop the temperature as low as I do. And so I found that I came in a little late to Valentine's Day and didn't make the numbers that I wanted to be able to bring all my stores everything that they'd asked for. So we did 575 bouquets, which is not nothing, but it's just the realities of farming is you hope that you're gonna meet a certain mark, but there's all these variables that come into play. I don't know if you experienced any of that with your Valentine's Day numbers, Linda.
Yeah, there was definitely a couple of nights when I was really hoping things would go along a little bit faster than they are. I have a system of LED lights set up in our greenhouse, to kind of help things go along a little bit faster, but we're having a very nice tulip week this week, the week after Valentine's Day too. We did pretty well,
Yeah,
but
same. I mean, I'm
there's still
still,
plenty to go around for sure.
harvesting some of those Valentine's Day blooms, and we're 2 days out. So they're all going to markets, and hopefully people are enjoying them just a little bit later.
I think so. There's a lot of pink in my studio right now, a lot of pink Columbus tulips, which are perfect for
Totally.
Valentine's Day, but
Yeah, and then
still
big
beautiful
project.
any time of the
So,
year.
we talked about how I like to Lady MacGyver stuff and build things and solve problems. One of the things I do here in order to really extend my season, Linda mentioned that she's growing tulips 6 months out of the year. I'm doing the same thing. So my first bloom was on January 1st. And tomorrow I'm building something that I call a snow bunker. And essentially it's a sustainable natural cold holding. So I create a frame out of pallets. We've just got a cache of pallets on the property that I use and reuse and recycle, whether I'm building an extra temporary hoop house or the snow bunker. We've got those materials available. So I frame it up with pallets and some 2x4s. And then I've started adding a layer of insulation board that, again, it's a material that I just have on the farm that sometimes I'm using to help insulate other areas. I put that on the roof area, and then once the frame of the bunker is up, I backfill with our John Deere tractor and essentially encase the entire thing in snow. And so I'm basically creating, outside cold holding with a layer of insulation from the snow. Then I take all of my latest tulip crates that I want to have blooming at the very, very end of the season. And I load those into the bunker, close it up. And eventually, over the next week or so, the temperature in there will drop. And my tulip crates, when they go in, are nice and moist. They've already rooted out for a long period of time. And so I'm putting them into a controlled environment that allows them to go into, a suspended animation, and they just kind of chill, and it's like pushing the pause button. The only energy that it requires is building the frame. a little bit of shoveling on my part and a little bit of work with the John Deere tractor. And then I'm able to hold those until like the beginning of May. It's a pretty amazing system because it's, basically free cold holding.
It's awesome and a little
Yeah.
bit
Yep.
risky, right? You
Yeah, it
have to
is
depend on the
risky.
snowfall
And
in order
I guess that's another
to
piece
build
of
it.
my personality though, is like I love me a gamble. And I'm not a gambler, but I'm totally cool with gambling on that. And I say that because I know I can use the snow, but if the snow's not there, I'm gonna find a solution. And so this year we, like you, our snowpack kind of came late. And so I'm sitting over here going, okay, what am I gonna do? Well, what I was gonna do was I was gonna source as many rectangular hay bales as I could find and put those around the pallet frame and then drench them with water. And so basically making hay bale ice cubes to insulate. I've considered buying a snow gun, or
Awesome.
making snow with a power washer. There's always I really like so a huge piece of who I am is I really truly strongly believe there is a solution for every single problem, and I will not stop until I find those. And that's just kind of how I do everything that I do within my business.
Okay, thanks for checking in with us about that snow bunker, Emily. We can't wait to follow up with you and see how it develops over the next couple of weeks. And I know that I always love watching you grow it bigger and bigger every season and figure out how the structure is going to work and how you're going to make it wider and longer and how many more bulbs you can fit in there. It's so good. And Emily and I are looking forward to welcome you back to the Frost on Flowers podcast for future episodes and come and, hear what our guests have to say too. We can't wait to really dig into all the different things that are working and sometimes not working for us on our own farms and helping us get through these long cold winters and helping us to bring flowers to our customers during times of year when they seem most desperate for them. So we look forward to the next episode. And we hope that you will share your ideas for future episodes with us, with a comment on our Instagram feed or by reaching out to us individually with a message. We're really excited to dig into those things that you're interested in also. So thanks again for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to subscribe, give us a rating, share a review, help us get along and get this thing really moving. Thank you again.
Thanks again for listening, and be sure to share your questions and ideas for future episodes. You can reach us at frostonflowerspodcast@gmail.com.
This podcast is produced and edited by Brad DiArco. We're so grateful for his help. We'll catch you next time for another cool episode of the Frost on Flowers podcast.